Okay, and we are back to Ecclesiastes. We're in chapter 9. And let's pray. Father, as we open up your precious book, I pray that you would lead our thoughts and our minds, help us to speak and hear only those things which are true, and I pray that you would lead us in your way, teach us to trust you tonight, and to live for you. Amen. We're going to read in Ecclesiastes chapter 9, beginning with verse 11 to the end of the chapter. I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill, but time and chance happeneth to them all. For man also knoweth not his time, as the fishes that are taken in an evil net, and as the birds that are caught in the snare, so are the sons of men snared in an evil time, when it falleth suddenly upon them. This wisdom have I seen also under the sun, and it seemed great unto me. There was a little city, and few men within it. And there came a great king against it, and besieged it, and built great bulwarks against it. Now there was found in it a poor wise man, and he by his wisdom delivered the city, yet no man remembered that same poor man. Then said I, wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. The words of the wise men are heard in quiet, more than the cry of him that ruleth among fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroyeth much good. Last week, when we went through the beginning of chapter 9, we were looking, actually it wasn't last week, it was 2 weeks ago. We were looking about the fact that there are things that happen to the righteous as well as to the wicked that don't make sense to us. People get things that we don't think they would deserve. Things happen to wicked people that are good. They have good lives sometimes. Things happen to good people that are bad, like people who have gone around their entire life doing nobody any harm and spending their lives to help other people will have very bad things happen to them. And sometimes we look out over the way life is sitting and we don't think it's fair and we don't understand it. But one of the things that the book of Ecclesiastes is here to tell us is that life is not fair. God did not make life to be fair to us. And he asked us in an unfair world where there is more trouble than there is good to serve him anyway. And the point of the book of Ecclesiastes is not to teach us that life is good, but rather to teach us that life is bad. And our best life can be found in the service of God, but even there our life will have many very bad things. And ultimately, this life on this earth is never going to bring us everything that man would seek for on this earth. And so while we go through this earth, we should be as happy as we can be living for God, but expecting that our reward, our happiness, is in God's reward after this life. Because the conclusion, as we've said many times, when we get to the end of this book, is that man's entire duty on this earth is to fear God and keep his commandments. He does not have any other duty on this earth but to fear God and keep his commandments. Now, as we come to the end of this chapter, we're going to go through some of the same kind of stuff tonight, where we are going to look at the fact that life does not treat people fair. We would like to be able to say, I'm going to do this and this is going to be the result. And there is no such certainty on this earth. There is no such certainty. And God did not give us anything by which we could understand even the things that happen. Now, this very first verse that we read says, I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill, but time and chance happeneth to them all. I want to start with the last phrase of this verse, time and chance. It's kind of difficult when you read through this verse and start thinking about real life examples, real life happenings, to try to work through exactly what Solomon is saying here. But I think that though we will have an imperfect view tonight, we will have at least a clue of where he's going. When he says time and chance, he's saying two different things. I'm going to start with the understanding that he is saying two different things. Time happens to some people, and chance happens to some people. Now, time is a word that has a very broad variety of possible meanings. Let's start putting out a couple synonyms or ideas of what a time could be. We gathered together tonight in this building, supposed to be at 6 o'clock. Some of us wanted to make sure that we were here at 6, so we came a little early. I'm not sure. I think there might have been a couple people that drove in a little bit late. I wasn't paying attention tonight. Generally speaking, that would be the case, that someone would come a little bit late, okay? But 6 o'clock tonight was a time. It's a time on the clock. But you see, the time on the clock, we go past the 6 o'clock mark on the clock twice a day. As long as we're alive, that clock hits 6 o'clock twice a day. 6 o'clock tonight wasn't just 6 o'clock. It was a meeting. That was a time. So let's call it an appointment. Okay? Let's say now that appointments and chances happen to all. So, suppose that you're a young girl and you're looking for a cute guy. And you have a guy come up with you and he says, may I take you out? And he sets up an appointment with you and he says, I'm going to come and I'm going to get you at 5 o'clock on such an evening and I'm going to take you somewhere. That's an appointment. Now, the time comes and his car pulls up and with a pounding heart you get into the car and go out with an idiot, okay? But the next day you might be shopping in Walmart and it might just be so happening that walking down an aisle, that guy comes towards you and you meet in the aisle at Walmart. That was a chance. I think this is the kind of two different things we're talking about when Solomon says time and chance. Sometimes things happen to us that nobody planned. Not even God said, this is what's going to happen to you. It's just simply, there are many things that God set in motion. For example, gravity. If I let go of this notebook here, God didn't determine that notebook was going to fall on the floor, but laws that God put in place predetermined that notebook would fall on the floor any time I let go of it. Those kinds of chance things happen to human beings. Sometimes they're good things and sometimes they're bad things. But sometimes God works in the affairs of men, and sometimes the devil works in the affairs of men. And sometimes some of God's people work in the affairs of men, and sometimes some of the devil's people work in the affairs of men. And over here, God and God's people will work in man's lives to try to make things better. And over here, the devil and the devil's people work in the lives of people to try to make things worse. But on the side of the people who are working in men's lives to make things better, many times what God does to a person to make things better are bad things. And over here on the side where the devil and his people are working in men's lives to make them sinners, many times the things that the devil and the devil's people give out to man are things that make their lives better. We have to watch for those things, because the devil will come to you and he will tell you he is going to give you something. But in return for his gifts, he wants your worship. Never take a gift from the devil. The devil's gifts take men to hell. So, that being settled, let's look at some of these things. Solomon says he saw. He did not theorize here. He saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift. In other words, he watched races happen with his own eyes. And he saw times when speedy people didn't win, because something went wrong. Sometimes the person who is known for the fastest speed might trip and fall. And somebody who's slower than them will pass them because they didn't trip and fall. Now everybody wants to explain why this person tripped and fell. Okay, let's come up with a couple of possibilities. One, the person who was responsible for the race had something in his path, a quarter inch crack in a sidewalk or something. And the person who is responsible for putting on this race, needs a lawsuit. That would be one possible thing. We could also say that the person who fell is getting older and shouldn't be racing anymore. Or if we're Christians, we can look up to God and we could say, God, why did you do this to me? And Christians do this all the time. Why did you do this to me? And then we puzzle for the next day, week, month, year, or lifetime, trying to figure out what God was trying to say to us when he did this. And sometimes God wasn't trying to say anything besides the fact that you're mortal. Just know who you are. You're capable of that. You can, when you are running a race, be the fastest person and lose the race. That's all the better of a person you are. I didn't do that to you. You did that to yourself. This is a very important understanding to have correctly, because it affects our idea of God. When we view God as having to have had a reason specifically for every single thing that happened in our lives, and he either having to be blamed or innocent or something, depending on if he did a good or a bad thing to us, oftentimes takes us into plain unbelief in the goodness of God. Because we begin to judge him for things that he didn't do. Or perhaps some of those things he did do, because it doesn't say that chance happens to all. It says time and chance happens to all. But if God did those things to us, what did he mean by his deeds? Did he mean to say, I hate you because he let something bad happen in our lives? Or did he mean to say, I love you because he let something bad happen in our lives? And one thing that God has given to the human race, every single one of us, he has given to every single one of us, a life with trouble, and asked for our faith in him. He has given that to every human being on earth. You cannot understand everything that God does. You cannot understand everything that happens. You cannot even try. But one thing that you can do, through the power of Jesus Christ, who is a Savior of sinful men, the one thing that you can do is keep your trust in God in spite of anything that happens. You are capable of that. You are capable of trusting God. So let's just look at a couple of interesting examples that I pulled out. The race is not to the swift. Do you remember? There was a man named Saul who was anointed king over Israel. And he did not please God. And a while after Saul had been anointed king, David was anointed to be king. But when David was anointed to be king, Saul was king. And for many years, David either served Saul or ran from Saul while Saul was king. And because Saul had been anointed of God, David wouldn't touch him. But there came a day that Saul died. And David was then brought back into Israel and anointed to be king. But he was king of a piece of Israel. And it just so happened that Saul's relatives decided that the kingdom belonged to their family. Now, God had not given the kingdom to Saul's family. He had given the kingdom to Saul, but not Saul's family. And now we have a sticky situation where David would not do anything at all against Saul. But now David is king, and now Saul's family is causing trouble. And now it says there was long war between the house of David and the house of Saul. Now I don't believe that war was in the will of God. I don't believe for a moment that war was in the will of God. We have the nation of Israel fighting themselves. There was no reason for that. Who was in the wrong? I doubt if anybody on the face of the earth can detect exactly who was in the wrong in that situation. It was probably some of both people, but God knows. But here the battle continues, and one day there was a major battle put on. And there happened to be three brothers, Joab, Asahel, and Abishai. And of those three brothers, it said that Asahel was light of foot, speedy. He could run like a deer. And it happened that Abner, who was on the side of Saul's family, leading the battle, was there one day when Asahel decided to chase him. Now remember, we're on the race is not to the swift. Now I want you to stop and think about this for a minute. Abner's running, and Asahel's behind him. If Asahel is chasing Abner, that means Abner has a head start. We didn't start here with the two of them running a race together, starting at the same point at the same time, trying to see who would beat. We started with Abner ahead and Asahel behind. But Asahel is fast enough, faster than Abner, that he's catching Abner. And they're running. And Abner, they're close enough now in this speed chase that Abner can actually talk to Asahel. And he turns and he tells him, "Turn aside, don't follow me. How am I going to hold my head up to your brother if I have to kill you?" It's basically what he told him. But Asahel didn't listen to Abner. He keeps running, and he's fast. You know, Abner has a spear. He's carrying a spear, but the front of the spear is pointing forward. On the back side of the spear is not a sharp end. On the front side of a spear is a sharp end. The front side of the spear is sharp for a reason, because it's easy to stab somebody with it. But Asahel's behind him. And Abner takes that spear with the butt end and he plunges it backwards and he goes right through the body of Asahel and kills him on the spot. Who won that race? The fast one? Everything was against Abner in the speed, but Abner won the race. Just because you have a talent does not mean you are going to be on top. Now you say, which was that? Was that an appointment or a chance? You have to ask God. Joab's brother is dead. One of David's men is dead. Who killed him? You know, we have to ask in the beginning of that situation, why are God's people fighting? God never put in his book, when Moses gave the law, God never put in his book how they should have civil wars. He never gave them the laws about how they should and shouldn't fight with each other. Something was already wrong in the nation, and this will be true in every human life. Christian, non-Christian, it doesn't matter who you are. You will never in your life be up to God's standards of where He wants you to be. And so when bad things happen in your life, you can start dissecting the things that happen to you and trying to find a reason for everything. And it's beyond you. It's totally beyond you. He says the battle is not to the strong. You know the story. There was one day a man that would probably bang his head on these light bulbs if he was in this building. He'd have to get down on his hands and knees to crawl through the door if he could fit through it sideways. He had a spear that would be heavy for any of us to carry around. His name was Goliath. And he had on him a coat of armor that would have prevented most of the weapons of their time from reaching him. And there was a little boy who wasn't old enough to be in the war, had never fought in a war, named David. And David had in his hand a little gizmo that he made out in the field. And he had a bag with 5 little stones in it. And they came to meet each other in a field. And the giant came down. The battle not to the strong. Goliath had no reason under the sun to fear that day, looking at life from the eyes of a man. If he had known God, he would have feared. But he didn't know God. That one was not a chance. That was an appointment. That day, Goliath had an appointment to meet God. You know, the next one says, neither yet bread to the wise. And we will all agree that the wisest person that ever walked on the earth was Jesus, who knew everything and was the Son of God. And yet the Bible says he hungered. If wisdom was capable of producing for us all the things that we needed in this life, surely the simplest of them all is bread. Then why did Jesus hunger? Because the Bible says here, neither yet bread to the wise. nor yet riches to men of understanding. How about Job? There was a time when Job had riches, and there was a time that he didn't. He was a man of understanding before, when he had the riches. He was a man of understanding when the riches were taken away from him. And through the whole thing, he did exactly what Solomon says we should do. In the end of the book, he feared God. But his understanding didn't keep him from God's appointment to lose everything that he had. Riches do not belong to you just because you are a smart man. How about favor? Nor yet favor to men of skill. There was a time when there was a man named Ahasuerus, and he was a very great king. He ruled over an empire of many nations. And he had a man in his kingdom who we could say was his favorite. It was a man whom he trusted, he respected, he loved, and he gave him authority and power. I don't think that man got there for nothing. I think he had some skill that brought him into favor with the king. His name was Haman. But there was a little Jewish girl named Esther who happened to have been taken captive out of the land of Israel, or her relatives had been taken captive out of the land of Israel. And she was growing up there in service to the king Ahasuerus. And she happened, by some quite incredible chances, to become the queen. If we go to Esther chapter 4 and read what Mordecai says to her. When Haman decided that it was time to destroy the Jews, it says in chapter 4 and verse 13, Then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, "Think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall there arise enlargement and deliverance, then shall there enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place, but thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" Haman was the one on top. Esther was a girl. Esther was in a kingdom where girls weren't even thought that much of. She was to be in obedience to the king. She was certainly to be in obedience to Haman, the king's servant. But there came a day when Esther came before the king, which was against the law. And the king, though he had married her, had not seen her for 30 days. She was called before the king. And when Esther came before the king and presented to him the problem she was having in life, there was a man named Haman that got hanged. One day previous, Haman was the king's favorite. The next day, he is hanging on gallows by the king's commandment. That was an appointment. That was not a chance. That was an appointment that he asked for, and God gave it to him. I think about the situation of Abraham. You know, when Abraham married Sarah, One healthy man, one healthy woman, no kids. What was that? We aren't God, so we don't know. But let's just say it was chance. There are some guys and some girls, for some reason, that we can't sometimes even know they can't have kids. In fact, what I have heard in my lifetime is that it's 1 in 5 couples can't have kids. Sarah couldn't. And for a lifetime, let's just say, we don't really know, but let's just say that for a lifetime, Sarah had to live through the outcome of the chance that her and Abraham couldn't have kids. But there was also an appointment. Because there came an angel to Abraham and talked to Abraham, and he said, according to the time of life, Sarah's going to have a kid. It was after chances were over. It was after the time that there could be chance applied to the situation, and it could only be a time. It could only be the direct interference of God that could make anything happen at this point. And it happened because God had promised it. Every single one of you guys, if you're not struggling with something in your life right now that you don't understand, you will be sometime next year. You can all probably go home and make lists of things that have happened to you that you don't know why they happened, you didn't want them to happen, and you questioned God about it when it did happen. God did not give us His understanding. He didn't give it to us. But there's one thing that He did give to us. He gave us the absolute certainty that we have the reasonableness, the right, and the ability to trust Him. Because He did show to us that He was capable and that He cared. So, we go through life and we say, I'm going to do this and this is going to be the result. Jason gets the opportunity when he's running a mechanic shop to buy a junkyard. And he says, oh, great, this will complement what I do. I can do this, and this is going to be the result. He can come up here next week and he can testify whether or not his results came as planned. Then there's other people. I know a guy who runs a store that had an opportunity to buy a store in Merrill. And he said, I buy a store in Merrill, I expand this, and this will be the result. And God sits up in heaven and only He knows what's actually going to happen. I do happen to have talked to a guy who has a store down in Madison. And he at one time had 3 stores. But he said it didn't go very well. And since got rid of, I believe, both the ones that he didn't work at. Well, you say, if he is smart enough to run one, why isn't he smart enough to run 2? And look at the people, and let me just tell you this, guys. I don't believe for a moment that Sam Walton was smarter than me. Now, you might believe it, but I don't. If he can run multiple stores, why can't I? But you know, the fact of the matter is, riches aren't necessarily to men of understanding. Because sometimes chance happens in their life, and sometimes God's appointments happen in their life. I know people who work for me, and they've said, this is a bad place to work. I'm going to go find somewhere better. And they leave. And a month later, a year later, they're calling back saying, yeah, do you guys have any openings? What happened to your better position out there? Well, it didn't work. You know, it just simply didn't work. Now, is that because you were too stupid to work in that job? Or is it just simply because things just don't go the way we think they will? We do not have the ability to predict the outcome of our lives. Jesus said that we should not say that I'm going to go into this city and... This wasn't Jesus, I'm sorry. This is James that says this. He said, you should not say, I'm going to go into this city and buy and sell and continue there a year and get gain. He says, you should say, if the Lord will, I'm going to do this. Because we don't know what's going to be on the morrow. Because if I'm good at buying and selling, the realistic thing about that is if I can buy and sell and turn so much profit, then if I go into another place where there is more people, I can buy and sell so much more and make so much more profit. But we don't know what's going to be on the morrow. I just read an article about Walmart and Amazon. They're fighting bad. Walmart is gathering together the suppliers of the nation to meet with their fierce representatives at their home base in Arkansas to tell them they must lower their prices so they can compete with Amazon. Walmart's the big dog, but Walmart doesn't know what's on the morrow. It could be, that in 10 years there is no Walmart. It could be. We don't know what's going to happen to them. I wish they were outlawed. Time and chance. Sometimes God intervenes in specific situations and stops things. He can come with death. Today you're healthy and working, tomorrow you're dead. He can come with sickness. He can come with poverty. You can lose everything. Or he can come with a gift. You know, sometimes one of the things that bothers me more than anything else, every once in a while I get to sit down and play games. And it happens more often than I can count that people with half my intelligence win. How can that be? You know, you would think that you had enough brains not to let chance overtake you in a game. But sometimes there's appointments too. I think sometimes God gets a kick out of keeping us humble. I think He does. Well, the next verse says, verse 12 says, for man also knoweth not his time, as the fishes that are taken in an evil net, and as the birds that are caught in a snare, so the sons of men are snared in an evil time when it falleth suddenly upon them. At one moment, there's a fish. He's swimming through the water. He's happy. He's well fed. He's healthy. He's getting something to eat. And at the next moment, he's being dragged out of the water by a hook that landed in his mouth. Poor fish. Men die just like that. One day, it's good. The next day, they're dead. We never know when it's coming. it falls suddenly upon them, Solomon says. Verse 13, he says, this wisdom have I seen also under the sun, and it seemed great unto me. There was a little city and few men within it, and there came a great king against it and besieged it and built great bulwarks against it. Now we have a story that's backing up this verse, nor the battle to the strong. There's a little city, few people. Great king comes against the city. But in this city there was found in it a poor wise man, and he by his wisdom delivered the city. I have a feeling that was a city full of Democrats, and that one poor wise man was a Republican. The reason he was poor was because he lived in a democratic society. But he was wise. And he delivered the city by his wisdom. We have no idea what he did, but he delivered the city. But at the end of the day, he was just a Republican who didn't know anything to the Democrats, and so they forgot him. That's just my personal idea. So Solomon says in verse 16, then I said, wisdom is better than strength. It is always. Wisdom is always better than strength. Wisdom in things of the earth are very good. We'll get you a long ways in things of the earth. But when your wisdom takes God into account, it will provide for you what nothing else on earth can do for you. When you have the sense in your head to fear God, then you are in a good position. So wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. The words of the wise men are heard in quiet, more than the cry of him that ruleth among fools. I'll give you these verses to go home and think about. I'm not honestly sure how this verse 17 exactly relates to the story as we've been reading it. But it's a good verse. And he ends the chapter with verse 18, wisdom is better than weapons of war. You don't necessarily have to be in a place of protection. You don't have to have strength and speed and riches and understanding and skill to be in a place that's a good place in this earth. But wisdom will definitely give you a very good head start in being ahead of the people who are around you. Wisdom is better than weapons of war. But one sinner destroyeth much good. There was one more verse that I had down that we didn't go to. If you go to Zechariah chapter 4 and verse 6. It says, then he answered and spake unto me, saying, this is the word of the Lord unto Zerubbabel, saying, not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord of hosts. Who art thou, O great mountain? Before Zerubbabel thou shalt become a plain. And he shall bring forth the headstone thereof with shoutings, crying, grace, grace unto it. Moreover, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, the hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this house, and his hands shall also finish it. And thou shalt know that the Lord of hosts hath sent me unto you. For who hath despised the day of small things? For they shall rejoice and shall see the plummet in the hand of Zerubbabel with those seven. They are the eyes of the Lord which run to and fro throughout the whole earth. We're reading here. The prophet Zechariah is prophesying to the children of Israel when they have returned from the captivity of Babylon. and they are rebuilding the temple in Jerusalem. But it wasn't going very well. Slowly, the work had gone on, and the people had been discouraged, and they had basically quit building until the prophets Zechariah and Haggai had come to them and began to prophesy and got them moving again. And here God promised them, it's not going to be by might or by power that this house is going to be finished, but it is going to be by God's Spirit. We need that verse in our churches today, because we have in this country a time of great departure from everything that is of God. We have in our churches great departure from everything that is of God. And the gospel seems weak and the preachers few. But we don't need might, power, riches. We don't need anything besides the Spirit of God, because if God makes an appointment with us to send His Spirit, His work goes forward. And when we look at the things that need to be done, what we do is we do the things He's called us to do. Because, you know, there are days of small things. We read about in verse 10, who hath despised the day of small things? Sometimes we live in a day of small things. We have church in a time of small things. We don't see much. But what we need, we don't need the world. We don't need their wisdom. We don't need their might. We don't need their things. We don't need money. But what we do need is appointments with God. And those appointments are things that God has promised to His people when we ask for them. These are not going to be our chance. It did happen by chance that we happen to be here right now in the United States of America in 2017. That was chance. But we need some time now. We need some of God's time. Esther happened by chance to be the wife of Ahasuerus when all the Jews were to be destroyed. But she was there for a time so she could fix the problem. God doesn't need us to plan our lives. I have talked to so many Christian young people, and they all have this vision of what God has called them to do. God's called me to be a missionary. He's called me to be a preacher. He's called me to be this. He's called me to be that. And we always, always end up with a call that we see as fruit. We see God has called us to go into such and such a place and start 1,000 churches. Or we see that God has called us to preach the gospel and see thousands of people saved. But you know, sometimes God just sticks in a Christian's lap that you're supposed to be a mom and raise kids. Sometimes that's just what He gives you. And we should always seek for God's blessing for other people's sakes. But we should always do the things that He gave us to do that are right in front of our face. Take advantages of the chances that He gives you and pray for His appointments. And that we will conclude the 9th chapter, and we will dismiss.